You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
It is your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Monday, the 18th of March, 2024. Later on, we'll speak with David Burthon-Jones from Equitas Investment Partners on the day on the markets, including what everyone's expecting to come from central banks around the world this week. But first, to Australia Post, and with fewer people sending letters and the cost of delivering them increasing, Aussie Post has been given the green light to lift stamps for regular letters from $1.20 to $1.50. Now, the ACCC says it's not objecting the move, which will start from April, and we'll also see a 25% increase for larger letters. Concession stamps for eligible concession card holders or seasonal greeting cards will remain. For more, here is Gary Starr from Australia Post.
Letters do continue to decline. To give you a sense of that, we've seen a drop in the last 5 years of 800 million letters being delivered, but 800,000 more households to deliver to. So that makes the economics challenging. So we do expect it to continue to decline. And this 30 cents will go some way to covering the losses, but it'll still be a very challenging business. But we will deliver the last letter in Australia, whenever that is.
Gary Starr there from Australia Post.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
To the Australian share market now, which did open in the red and stayed there for most of the morning until lunchtime when the market started trending higher. And by the close, it finished just a touch firmer. The S&P ASX 200 up 0.07%, 7,675. For more on the day's market action, I spoke with David Burthon-Jones, a portfolio partner at Equitas Investment Partners. So, David, global central banks will really be in focus this week. We've got Australia, the US, UK and Japan all meeting. There's talk Japan may lift interest rates, ending negative rates there. But everywhere else, I guess the discussion will be when the first cut will be. So run us through your thoughts of that and the implication for markets.
Well, the US is busy pushing back on rate cuts in the near term. And the reason that they're doing that is because underlying growth keeps surprising to the upside. Job creation continues to be stronger than we expected each month, every month, and inflation it's lingering a little in the background, complicating matters. They will cut. It'll just be toward the back end of the year. With Australia, the RBA has generally kept a hawkish bias to their commentary. It's quite similar to the Americans, and there's likely no cuts until at least August based on the cash rate futures market. But I would say that our economic data, it's in a completely different position. The unemployment rate here is rising. Consumption growth is simply not as strong. Retail sales are choppy. Buildings approvals data has been profoundly weak and will be continued to be profoundly weak, we think. And that the odds should favour near-term rate cuts then after August to really try and get ahead of a downturn that we think is coming. Now, markets would initially like that. They would like rate cuts. It would definitely be good for bonds. It would probably be good for stocks in the short run. The key question is whether or not those cuts would be enough to stabilize some of the weakness that's creeping in. If it doesn't, then the outlook for stocks would likely be poor, in our view.
In terms of those rate cuts, particularly in Australia, how do you see them coming? Fast and hard, like the way they come up, or slower to come down?
The pause might last at least a little bit. That's the plateau in rates. But I think once the RBA begins to cut, they're likely to cut quite quickly. If they are behind the curve, they'll need to move fast to get ahead of it again. So there's this old saying that rates often go up in the escalator, but they come down in the elevator.
Okay, can we run through the market today? It's been in negative territory for much of the day. What's driving it?
Well, we did have a very powerful run from October onwards. The market put on double digits, over 10% in a very short run. Some of that is the natural volatility that's inherent in markets and how they're governed by this trade-off between animal spirits and uncertainty. But in this case, I think some of the global tech rally, stocks like Nvidia and Apple, running out of puff a little bit, perhaps at the margin, some profit taking, perhaps at the margin, that's likely a key offshore driver of our market. And then we've got this realization that iron ore, which is a particularly important commodity that has a strong bearing on the national income, it's been falling and falling by quite a bit. It's down a little over 25% year to date. And that's quite meaningful. So that will really take the gloss off many a rally.
Can we also talk about China and iron ore? Chinese data came out today. First of all, what does that say about the economy? And on the flip side, that iron ore price has been weakening, although it's bounced back a little bit today. What's behind that? especially the implication for miners, the market, and ultimately the government as we approach budget?
Sure. Okay. So the market moving news was the monthly data print out of China today. They call it the monthly data drop. And most of it was somewhere in the realm of ordinary to okay. It certainly wasn't great. Industrial production was up and up a little bit more than the market expected, but retail sales were particularly weak. The unemployment rate rose marginally. We would say overall that China is just simply now starting to chart a fundamentally different path to the one that's been on for really most of the past 15 years. And that path just does not require the same amount of iron ore or metallurgical coal as it used to. So in our view, authorities, they recognize that China, it has a property bubble. That bubble needs to unwind in a relatively orderly fashion, or at least as orderly as it can be. And that would mean less residential apartment demand. It would mean less demand for office towers and the like. And that ultimately their economy needs more consumption, policy measures that really help raise the household share of income. That's the demand side of the economy, and not the supply side of the economy. And all of that is, it's quite different to China's historical go-to strategy of effectively stimulus in property, fixed asset investment, and manufacturing whenever things got tough. So the downside risk in commodity prices also places some downside risks to the budget, which you touched on. Although historically, governments have taken quite a conservative view on commodity prices in the first instance, and that means that they don't need to dramatically recut their figures each time the price of coal goes up or down $20 a ton.
Finally, where do you see the opportunities for investors at the moment?
Some of the trades that you and I have talked about together over time have played out quite well, which is nice and pleased to say. We'd been advocating for insurance companies for quite some time. Those have performed very well. We had been concerned about unsustainable lithium prices, for example. That's something that we've talked about in these sessions. That's played out in spades with lithium hydroxide prices or spodumene prices, you name it, down in the order of sort of 70 to 80%, quite a fall. At the moment, we see a bunch of idiosyncratic, really stock-specific drivers at the moment, rather than big, broad sectoral thematics. So that's companies with leverage to a recovery in global goods, specifically the volume of those goods. That's appealing to us given low valuations. So that would be stocks like Amcor and Aurora in packaging, stocks that are leveraged to population growth and strong immigration, companies like Telstra in telecommunications or Coles and Metcash within the supermarkets are also quite appealing given their valuations. Some of the healthcare names have been sold down quite heavily of late. That's stocks like Sonic Healthcare and ResMed. They're both quite leveraged to a normalization in pathology volumes and or a recovery in GP consultations, which is how the process of getting a CPAP device to treat sleep apnea starts. So it's a bit more of an eclectic mix than usual, the so-called stock pickers market at the moment, Ricardo.
That's David Burthon-Jones there from Equitas Investment Partners.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.